Hello and welcome back to the Breachmere podcast. Today is another beautiful day because we're talking about the Neverborn faction. There's a big tournament coming up, Nova, DC, I believe. So a couple fine folks here are preparing for that tournament, so that's what we'll be talking about today. The rounds, talking about monsters we like, overall thoughts. So just quickly going through, everyone knows Man Scott here. We have Jim Dyson on. Yep, I just skip right over Scott, always here. Jim Dyson.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, the Dice Man. And a new guest to the pod, Maeve.
Hello!
So, talking today about the Masters Tournament primary. Looks like the first round is Cursed Objects. So, who do y'all like to play into Cursed Objects?
Okay, I'll start off. So, with standard Cursed Objects, we also have Leave Your Mark, Secret Meetup, In Your Face, Hidden Martyrs, and Load 'Em Up. My favorite master to take into Curse Objects here typically has been Yuri. Most of the time, Yuri 2, due to the fact that with Old Ways and his Ruin Tokens, makes for a very potent combo. Although I do think that Yuri 1 does have some play against some very specific matchups and or if the terrain allows it. But yeah, Yuri 2 is my go-to in this one with the ability to have a little bit of healing. I typically bring, and if I'm bringing Yuri into Cursed, I'll bring Serena because, you know, it's Serena and she loves to heal people. Plus that hole in the world with Cursed Objects, be able to plunk some nice juicy target in the middle of your crew so that your Garion can beat on them. Always good combo. And he has a lot of different things he can do with this one. With the crew I bring, with the Hidden Martyrs, Leaving Your Mark, he has a tendency to try and control the middle of the board. Secret Meetup is always good, especially with Hole in the World. If you need to, you get that high tome in hand, you can bring the model where you need it to be for Secret Meetup. So that is kind of my go-to in Curse. What about you, Maeve? What are you thinking for this one?
So I was just on another podcast talking about how I was completely insane and brought Dreamer 1 into Curse.
It's my kind of
plan. I will do it again. I won, so I will do it again. I will keep doing it till I learn my lesson, and then I will probably continue to do it. But that was really because I brought one master and I wasn't going to change it. If I have the whole faction out in front of me, I'm probably bringing Nephilim into Cursed Objects. Ooh, okay. Just because Two Matures and Nekama do a lot of killing. And it's fun to just run in and punch things until they stop. I think after that, I'm honestly, weirdly enough, I really like Faye for those because I'm a big fan of Titania 1. She just goes in, puts a lot of pressure on people, and usually, like, Titania plus Emissary can pretty much get you everything you want out of scheme or strategy points so that the rest of your crew can go in and do. Because, I mean, like, that's the secret sauce of Neverborn. There's not many crews I don't just like automatically slam 10 points in for the Emissary.
Yeah, he is pretty nice. I've been practicing a crew with a Emissary into Pandora, and I'll probably talk about that a little later on that I've been really enjoying. Actually, another reason I like to bring Yuri is in the Curse, because you're usually, unless it's corn or something like that, you're seeing a lot of typically possibly seen some alpha crews, and Thune, with his being able to put someone into a pillar, is a big middle finger to those, especially if it's a single model alpha. It's just, yeah, no one wants to go into that and become a popsicle, but yeah.
People say that Thune is kind of a one-trick pony, but I'm here to tell you, he actually do quite a few things, and some of them are just as nasty as the Frozen Trophy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the 2-4-6 damage track is nothing to sneeze at.
But he also,
I just love when you can run my favorite thing to do is run in a Garion, heave trigger once, heave trigger a second time, and then put it back, like, 6 inches back, and then Thune just walks up and is like, boop, all right, you're a pillar. Like, I did that to, I was playing Jesse one night, and I did that to Alphonse. And, like, Alphonse is tough to deal with.
Oh, yeah.
But I got a good heave trigger off and then like just walked up and bonked him on the head with Thune, and yep, he's an ice pillar the rest of the game. Like
yep, yeah. And if especially in Curse, if you have someone ice pillar to the end of the game, that's your turn five curse object right there.
Yeah. Oh, it's your turn five cursed object, or if like you have anything that just needs to be like end of turn, grab something like catch and release, like, oh, turn four, I'm going to park my guy next to him. I'm going to pop them out with the guy, and then I'm just going to run away. And who cares? They're way back there out of position, and I get the points.
Yep. Yep.
It's fun.
So let's hit turn two, because it looks like we lost Jim for a little bit here, so we can come back
I'm here.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry, Jim. Why don't you go ahead and tell us what you're thinking turn round one?
Sure. So I don't have the breadth of knowledge about Neverborn that you two, or you three all do. So I'm going to be approaching these pools from someone who's exploring the faction for the first time proper in third edition. Cool. And what I'm looking at when I see round one is I see a lot of punchy schemes and a lot of holding a certain point. And I don't know, this seems like it really funnels towards the center of the board with leave your mark as an option. And all that to say, this seems like a great pool for Woe. Mm. This seems like Pandora can go park in the middle of the board and say, I am going to farm points off the center. And if you come in to try and deny, I will do Woe things to you. So I'm feeling Woe here.
Interesting. How do you, I mean, so leave your mark is definitely like in the middle. Mm-hmm. I know like you're wanting to kind of hit the middle. Because the reason that I've looked at like, I've never really looked at Woe for cursed objects is because there's generally no centralized place to fight at, which is what I really like her for. Like I want to take her in like, guard or, you know, turf war or something where you know where the fight is going to be. And cursed is always weird because like you kind of have to guess where the fight is going to be. Probably the reason like I might take secret meetup in this one because I normally am really good at like kind of picking out sort of where people want to put their models, but like in cursed that would kind of be one of those I'd be like, well, I'm not so sure.
I mean, don't forget Pandora 2 has an action that pushes the enemy 4 inches, and you have access to Lysa, who have Bring It, Cade, who has Lure. In faction, you have Doppelganger Lure, you have Heave on Aversions, you have Hole in the World on Serena. I feel pretty confident that if I wanted to do a secret meetup in the middle of the board, I could probably grab somebody and pull them in.
That's fair enough. I think people sleep on... Honestly, I think people sleep on her whole keyword in general. Like, Lissa are so good. Bring it on an incorporeal model that can get where they... And then can get around, can stagger you, then bring it and pull you out of position and then not be there the next turn are super good.
Yeah,
aversions are just nuts. Just dumb.
And, you know, I think one thing we'll probably talk about later, all of these are... We're all coming up with ideas about these pools without having an opposing faction to like pick against. And I do kind of feel Neverborn's not a faction. You can just slam one keyword necessarily for a whole event and not worry about counters. I think you have to take into consideration other, like my whole spiel there about pulling things in. If I go into guild, that's off the table.
We are a weird faction like that, where Master Declan can be a big factor as how it goes, because some of our crews just have hard count.
Yeah, and kind of touching on what Maeve said about, you know, not knowing where things are going to be, with the crew, you know, like you said, you have the lures and the bringets and stuff like that, but also Candy and Pandora have 10-inch range on their attacks, so if you're kind of taking over the middle of the board, it does make it a little bit difficult to get away from one, if not both, of those models.
Mm-hmm.
So they can reach out and touch you and or bring you in. So yeah, I think I later on when we get talking about maybe certain factions we may face that could change up these picks, I'll touch on that with what my opinion on that is. But yeah, I think mm-hmm. Pandora can do this one too. And I especially think that she'd be a good one if you're gonna be facing a lot of armor.
Yeah, I agree. I can agree with that.
So round two, we have a flank, carve the path. We have a public demo, sabotage, hidden martyrs, set the trap, and assassin. So what I'm thinking on this is I had been playing a lot of Z2 with carve the path, and I don't know if I'm just not very good at her or whatnot, but every time I play her into carve a path and I face any kind of crew that can deal out some damage, I just, my crew, or maybe it's just the way I'm playing her, she folds like a wet paper towel. So I am actually not going to be playing Z2 into carve. I will, and this will be kind of dependent on what I face. This is going to be either a Z1 crew and kind of maybe running like more of an all-star crew as opposed to really strong into her keyword. I mean, obviously, slurds, you know, it's carve the path, slurds, first mate, right? You're gonna be thinking that. My other thing I'm thinking on this one is Dreamer 2. And because, I mean, his crew is really good. It's fast. Dreamer 2 can teleport to where he needs to be. So that's what I'm kind of thinking on that with that. Now, I think, especially if I think I'm going to be facing a aggressive crew, I'll probably go more Z1 because of Assassinate. She's a little bit harder to kill, especially if it's a melee crew. And especially the way I play Dreamer 2, I have a tendency to be a bit aggressive with him, and that can be a detriment into an Assassinate pool. So those are my thoughts on that. What are you thinking, man?
Well, here's the thing about Carve a Path in Neverborn. We have Wicked Dolls.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters what keywords you bring. You have Wicked Dolls, and they will get the job done most of the time. They're very difficult for three stones to take out. They do a lot of work. This one is another one where I was actually, and Jim and I had this conversation the other night talking about, and I'm sorry, Jim, if I steal your thunder for this one, but we were talking about Broodmother. Yeah. Especially with the new hounds, mm-hmm. because you can basically have the two hounds you start out with poop out some more hounds, and then they just go run the markers while the rest of your opponent's crew is trying to deal with the big boys that you're throwing out to be, you know, just absolutely obnoxious. So looking at this one, I think I was going to run Nekema too. That's pretty much my thoughts on it.
That's what I would do as well.
So talking about the hounds, are you thinking of like hiring more than one? Hire two. Okay.
Jim, if you want to, because you probably explain more eloquently than I can why you hire two hounds.
So sure. For me, the theory I'm playing with in my head is you need significant. You need models hired at the start of the game to kick the markers in the first place, right? And hounds being nimble and move six can kick, move, kick without a flip. So Silurid are great at it, but hounds can do it without a card flip that you either have to cheat or Black Joker at the wrong time. And I know that there's been chatter in a few games from Bad Foe Haku about like taking candy in a Nekema crew, specifically Broodmother in that case, and then you do the cheeky thing where you summon a hound, have a summon hound attack Candy, have Candy use Opportunist to remove the summon hound stunned, then have the summon hound summon a new hound, and then you repeat it until one hound becomes four. Problem for me is that costs you three moderate crows.
Yeah.
And while you can dig for them with Broodmother, which is something I want to touch on holistically later, two hounds at the start means you only need to get two moderate crows, yeah. which frees up your hand to do some of the other things you may want to do with, you know, the triggers and TNs that you may have in Nephilim. And aside from that, Nephilim are still flying move six models. So it's not just the hounds. It's just about every model in your crew can kick, move, kick. And with Broodmother in particular, Set the Trap and Sabotage are much easier to get off because of Birthright, mm-hmm. and the ability to just drop markers wherever you want them to. So I definitely think that your point about Wicked Dolls stands, and literally any crew could do well with two Wicked Dolls running the markers. But I like the idea of Nekema.
Yeah, I've seen that Bad Pohaku one when he took the candy. I was thinking if you wanted to go, my own take on that is if you wanted to go cheaper than candy, which don't get me wrong, candy's phenomenal in any crew, is what I think you wanted it could be another option to go cheaper is take Elisa because she can do the same thing, stripping off the stunned. And since she's in corporal, chances are she isn't going to be taking any damage. Plus, with Bring It, she can help with the unpack. Not that Nephilim.
So she brings them up. That's actually really cute. I like that a lot.
She does have a high TN for it. She needs an 8 for the Bring It. But if she walks up, staggers her model she's going to do it to, then she rips the stagger off to give herself a plus flip. So now you're flipping two cards to get that target number 8. Helps a little bit with the hand pressure. And it's obviously much cheaper than candy. Now, the big thing is you have to worry about is that that model has to take a punch at it. So, you know, you severe after you do it, you know, flipping double severes on mature, you just pulled up. Now that's a dead Lysa. But, I think that is a nice little switch. But, yeah.
Well, that's not bad because if you do it to hounds, hounds are min one. Yeah. So they just ignore the incorporeal. Yeah. That's cute. The other list I would consider for this. You were talking about Z2. You run, you've got public demo. So you run Z2 with 3 Wahlgeists, Juju, Kurgan. You might be able to still fit. Yeah, you can fit First Mate in there as well. And the cool thing about her is that on turn 1, she can kick a marker, ditch 2 cards to make or ditch a card to make the tree kick a marker, then she can walk up to it, summon a shadow effigy, and then the shadow effigy goes, tells her to kick the marker, and she's kicked the marker again. She can discard a card to have the Wahlgeist kick the marker again, and so you've got both. You in like 2 activations, you've got both of them up the board, like where you need them to be.
Remember, you can only do the Moth Witch discard to copy a general action once per turn.
Is it once per turn? I thought it was once per activation.
It's once per turn.
Oh, if it is once a turn, then ignore me. I was going.
And you can, in fact, set it up to do the railgun kick.
Yeah, it is once per turn. Well, never mind. Boo. Well,
your point about the shadow effigy still stands because you can still have the shadow effigy. You can keep one marker near her, like through turn 2, and then just set up your chain. And then because it's generated actions, you can absolutely kick it 12 inches or 18 inches with 2 cards in hand and a shadow effigy.
Yeah, because the shadow effigies. It's all about how you do the Moth Witch because you have to you can kick it and then you're discarding a card and you can discard the card to have her kick it again.
Oh yeah, it's I've done it a few times. It's really nice, but yeah, I just find her crew and again maybe I'm just a bad Moth Witch player, but her crew folds really easy.
It's a fine line. It is a fine line. You have to really you have to really play cagey, and you have to really know. I mean, it's the Neverborn thing, though. Like, you have to know what fights you can win.
Oh yeah,
and that's kind of, you know, Moth Witch is no exception to that. Granted, having Permastun helps out a lot in that manner. So it all depends on what you're playing against, and you know how you're going to pull it off. But honestly, I don't hate Wahlgeist. If you're going for the slow kick, you're going for the slow kick the cans. Wahlgeist are really, really good for that.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Just because they're tanky, they can kick it. They have ambush. They can get up the board. You have access to Kurgan, who can just toss people willy nilly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I do love me some Kurgan.
Kurgan's faction MVP. I'll fight anybody that says otherwise.
You'll die on the hill that the Kurgan is.
yes, that is the hill I die on. You're correct.
Well, for Tongan Kurgan, would any of you hire Kurgan in Euripides crew?
I don't hate it. The only problem I have with Kurgan and the Euripides crew is first of all, there's your Cyclops tax.
Sure.
I hate Cyclops. I hate Cyclops. but they're essential because they're your only real way to get out markers that aren't called geists.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't hate Kurgan in there. I just think you have to figure out like, what are you taking out for it? I don't know about you, but I don't run the Damned with Euripides anymore.
I haven't been as hot on him. He definitely is the easiest to kill.
I find him to be essential. And actually, I like him for a leave your mark because he can be out on the side and they don't think of him, you know, they think of him as a flanker and stuff like that. And so he can just leap, walk, and get that leave the mark marker when they're not suspecting him to do it at the end of the turn. But yeah, I mean, I can see some people, you know, they don't like the Damned, but I mean, I love him. Other than like one or two games,
he just falls apart. Yeah, he just falls apart too easily, I think, for me. For the Damned's costs, I can fit in a second Garion, and God, I love Garions. It's just so hard not to bring double Garion in any Euripides list.
Yep, they're double Garion gets slammed in that list all the time.
I'll take a second Garion over Thune a lot of times, honestly. Yeah,
I can see it. Waxing poetic on.
Okay, so round three. So we got what? Corner, Covert, Vendetta, In Your Face, Breakthrough, Spread Them Out, and Public Demo. So and Jim, you wanna start us off on this one?
Sure. So my big thought here is this is end of day one. This is going to be your final round. So your brain's going to be shot. So naturally, I want to take the crew that takes the least brain power, which is why I'm probably going to be taking either. No, not either. This is a Dreamer crew. This is a Dreamer.
Yep.
And I know that sounds weird because Dreamer has a lot of stuff going on, but this is to me a Dreamer 2 kind of board.
Mm-hmm.
Because Scatter on Insidious Madnesses is really good in covert operations. Dreamer teleporting to be like the one strat that you need at the end of the game is really good. And I don't know, Spread Them Out and Breakthrough seem really easy to do. All the schemes here look really easy to do for Nightmare to me.
Yep. I agree with you 1,000% on this one. This is definitely a Dreamer 2 bull. The only one that I would say I could probably see coming in more is, or maybe not more, but just wanting to play it would be kind of a fun Marcus as well. Just because the crew is very fast, can get where it needs to be. You can bring two of those beautiful, beautiful snakes right now and get all your schemes done. You have the Eagles. The Eagles are so good. And then you just have Marcus knocking everybody around and bears running in being jerks.
And then we're 3 for 3 because this is definitely a Dreamer 2 pool for me as well. Yeah, like you said, Insidious. I mean, I'll take 3 Insidious into this pool and not regret it at all. You can't discount In Your Face with Dreamer 2 because he can be anywhere on the board. And if something's been chewing on that 8-stone model, he can come in and finish it off. And with the endpoint one, I typically, and I know a lot of people aren't real big on this model, but I in my Dreamer 2 list, I do like Copulus in there. And he, if as long as you're playing cagey with him, maybe keep him on the corners, it's real easy with that move 14 for him to get into that deployment zone at the end of the game for that endpoint of In Your Face. So Dreamer 2 all the way on this one, no looking back.
Yeah,
that model is so bananas.
His good games are grisly good. I'll say that.
And I enjoy and he just brings another way to move models out of activation with his free action. And typically I'm using him to help unpack the Lord of the Chomping to get him up the board early.
Guys, give me just a second. I'll be right back.
No worries.
Yeah, sure.
But I love Dreamer 2 into this. So round four. Round three was easy. Round four. So starting the next day, although I have to say is, Jim, you said that being the last game of the day and going with an easy crew. Yeah. Dreamer 2 is definitely not the cruise mode for it because he can be a little brain taxing to play, but yeah,
sure, that was partly a joke. But it is something to keep in mind.
Yeah,
is that your opponents are also going to be equally brain drained at the round three. So bringing models that have things like terrifying, manipulative, or other kinds of decision points. I don't know. I think there is something to be said about using that as a, keeping that in mind when you're playing.
I think that'll be a bigger one for me on the GT end of day one, mm-hmm. because I will have then been playing Malifaux for 3 days in a row. And I can tell you, as you know, going to Captain Con and doing it there and then coming here and playing in Nova, I can tell you that day three of Malifaux is big, especially if somebody talks you into going and like hanging out late night on Friday night and, you know, maybe imbibing some alcohol. And yeah, so.
Speaking of, I'm sure this year, if you're going to know, you'll have the opportunity to join the Danger Planet friends at their karaoke nights. I encourage everyone to go.
Yeah, it looks like it'll be a lot of fun. They always have a blast.
Oh, yeah. But be careful with that, because I've seen them the next morning after the karaoke. And a large quantity of alcohol is usually partaking of, and they always seem to be coming in like, why do I do this? Even at Gen Con, they were, you could see some of them were feeling the effects of their previous night of karaoke.
Yeah.
But anywho, round four?
We got Wedge Curse Objects, Catch and Release, Hidden Martyrs, Breakthrough, Set the Trap, and Load Them Up. So maybe you want to get us started on this one?
Yeah, this is the one I was going to bring Mr. Castor to.
Oh boy.
Why? Because he wants to catch you and eat you. It's Wedge, and he has a very, very fast kidnap. So the chances that on turn one, Castor can be in your backfield killing your support models is very, very likely. And I feel like in Cursed Objects, if you can put that level of pressure on them early, maybe not necessarily killing all those models, but just putting the huge pressure on them early, it makes a big difference. And then the rest of your crew gets to just kind of do what they want to do. So this is probably where I am bringing my new patented technology, which is going to be Castor Primal. What is that ability called? Primal something Primal or other.
Rage, I think it is. Or is that it?
Maybe. it's something. But yeah, he's going to be bringing Visceral Rampage. There it is.
Neither one of us were close.
I knew it was something cool. It's really cool ability. But what he's going to do is he's going to take the Misty Emissary. He's going to throw the Misty Emissary up to the middle of the board on turn, you know, on his first turn. He's going to charge into something on the front line, double blast into their crew, and then proceed to attack one more time and take out something that's essential to your crew. And then he's just in your middle of your crew being obnoxious. He might go down at the end of turn two, but he's going to do so much before he gets there. It's really brutal. And then by the time you're done dealing with that, here comes the Misty just also causing havoc. And you've got them stuck right there at the top of their wedge, and you can go do whatever you want to.
I can see that.
Sounds brutal.
Just a question. Have you taken any matures with Castor, either version, or have you not taken them out of keyword?
I don't. Maybe I should, but no, I'm so addicted to the Misty Emissary. Really, my Castor list doesn't change very much. It's Castor. It's the sword with the upgrade. It's the Misty Emissary, Barbaros, and Urn Bearer. Either two Urn Bearers with Ancient Pact, or an Urn Bearer with Ancient Pact and Serene, and a Blood Vessel.
Yeah, Blood Vessels. Everyone shits on them, but they can get some work done.
They score your points. Yep. That's what they do. They bounce up the board and score your points.
I'm right there with you.
You can't argue. Yeah.
So I'm thinking. So I took Emissary Euripides. The round one for Curse. So on this one, though, I'm thinking Pandora. And I do also like the Emissary with Pandora, because you know what's better than a regular Emissary? An Emissary with Fast.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I do have a list I've been experimenting. I won't take it in the curse, but I got this, saw this in a Vassal game, and the person was playing it against Brian from Schemes and Stones, and it's got two Lysa, because you use the Lysa to bring up Pandora and Candy, because they don't punch because they don't have a scratch. But in Curse, I don't think that's good because the Lysa can die relatively easy. And with this being Wedge, mm-hmm. you figure either you're going to be seeing a lot of guns or the big alphas. So probably bring some a kind of a beefy model to take the place of the two Lysa normally taking this crew. But yeah, Emissary, Candy, you know, make them focus and fast. Pandora just stunning the shit out of things. it's pretty good. So yeah, I'm thinking Woe for this one. And I also think, other than maybe like load them up, that that they can be very good at these schemes. So yeah, I'm thinking Woe for this one. Now this one probably a little bit more like board and opponent dependent, but I have a feeling that mm-hmm. we're going to be seeing a lot of armor. So Pandora, I think, is really good mm-hmm. Into armor with just all the ping damage. What do you think, Jim?
Yeah, I'm on board. I'm on team Woe, or I would also say Nephilim here. Partially because of my limited collection, partially because it's, you know, this is the kill strat and it's up close. So I could actually afford with Nephilim, for example, to play back, like not deploy at the tip of the spear, so to speak, but behind a bit, and then use my speed to catch up and just kind of blunt the ability for someone to, I don't know, dive Castor into my line turn one first activation.
Only monsters do that.
Sure. Monsters, right? Who play Neverborn.
And Breakthrough just feels like such a good scheme for a Wedge-cursed game. And the rest of these are all pretty good. I actually really like Sorrows for catch and release with Woe. Because of their ability to teleport with Misery Loves Company, you can easily engineer a situation where you can just teleport the Sorrow in at the end of a turn and then teleport it out at the next turn. That feels real good. And I know you're not hot on Woe for load 'em up, but Poltergeist is real good at denying load 'em up. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a knock in its favor.
Dorian Crow, if you take him, he can help with that. He can push models into markers and make them disappear.
Yeah, I don't leave home without Dorian.
No, he's so good.
He is.
Have you taken him at a keyword at all? Or
no.
I've messed with him. When I bring him for marker removal, he's only removing one per turn, so I feel easy tarp.
I know I'm ridiculous, and it's just me, but this pool, playing Woe, do you know who I kind of want to bring in just because it's stupid? Wrath. They're probably going to be running a lot of melee, so if you park Wrath in the middle, just being obnoxious with all your other like layers of threats, and he's just kind of sitting there going, nope, sin token, nope, sin token, nope, sin token, it could be fun.
I think there's a lot of value for Wrath. I think I feel bad about it because we didn't talk about it in the first round, but we can't talk about a kill strat without acknowledging the existence of New Angel Eyes.
Good God, have you played her yet?
I have not played with her yet.
She's so good. She's so good. And she literally just her on the board changes how your opponents have to play. And it is fantastic.
It's a special feeling for us Neverborn.
I
think Angel Eyes is one of the major factors that I'm into. I'm trying Neverborn at Nova.
Wow.
Like, so realistically, she is giving the faction so many tools they didn't have. And I think she pairs really well with a number of masters in the crew, in the faction, because I don't know if anyone's noticed, but like, I think just about every master has one title that can draw at least three cards in an activation, if not more. And when you pair card draw with a gun and multiple ways to cheese out focus on her, seems like a good outlet. And you also have the Emissary that we've talked about. That's two quality damage dealers that the faction has access to now that it can swap.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to get my hands on one of those models because I do not own her.
She feels really good, and I've played her in Dreamer 1 mostly lately, and she feels really good because you can park her near a Daydream, and just like one of its actions every turn is focus, and it's just basically focus for her.
There's definitely
and then she just stands there and Yeah. She picks a model that they don't want, that they want to keep on the board, and takes it off every time.
Well, since since we're kind of talking about models that we may want to think about, especially in the Cursed, if you are going to be facing a crew that poops out focus, I don't think you'd be out of the realm of possibility of taking a Hildegard to deny them all that focus. And now, obviously, this would have to be on their melee beaters. Or, I'm sorry, yeah. No, actually, that's disregard that statement. But, I mean, if putting her in the middle, especially if you're playing like a bubble crew, you don't have to worry about blasts, she can really kind of be very helpful. Now you have to be careful because
I'm coming around on her.
But yeah. I think she's definitely something that you want to think about when you're making your crew for especially a curse pool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely coming around on her a lot more than when I originally, I was like, oh, no, this thing dies and that's the end of the story. But if she can get shielded stuck on her and that, you know, just having take by the hand is good. Like, we don't have a lot of, like, Neverborn doesn't have a lot of just, like, movement without caveats attached to it. So push take by the hand is really, really good for that. And then facing the crowd isn't too bad to keep her alive. Card draw is always good. And then the entrancing aura is just, it's just money.
Well, and also, I've tried her when I was going to be facing a high-focus crew in my Yuri crew. Kind of hard for people to get to her when you have all the wide boys in front of her.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So just some
big butts.
Something to think about. I was thinking about that. So I think last round five. So we got guard the stash on standard, catch and release, secret meetup, assassinate, leave your mark, and spread them out. So I'm kind of split on this one. Again, I think this is one that's going to be board and opponent dependent, but this is Dreamer 2 or Pandora for me.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly because there's so much abilities to move your enemy models with either one of those crews. And now Pandora's a little bit better at like holding the middle of the board. You don't want to be coming into all those misery bubbles and her ability to move you if you take it. And Dreamer, you know, obviously with the ability to scatter with Insidiouses, and they're so fast as a crew that they can get to those back markers easier than some other crews. So that maybe if you do face a crew that's going to hold the middle of the board, you can get to those back ones a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so that's what I'm thinking for that. And again, with Assassinate in the pool makes me always a little leery with Dreamer 2, but Pandora's, I won't say unkillable because she just died in a game I played the other day. But she's really hard to kill and can do a lot of these schemes with either one of those crews.
Agreed. I am echoing everything you said, that those two are kind of where I'm feeling for this one.
So this is the championship, and the championship, the Invitational, specifically says that you can bring dual masters.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a list for this one.
Ooh.
It is our friend Castor again.
What?
With Mirathene, two Urn Bearers, Lucius II, ooh, and a Doppelganger.
What?
Wow. Because basically, I could kidnap every damn thing I want to. Lucy gets to just jump around, do whatever he needs to. He can use stash markers, you know, to get where he wants to be, staggering things. Castor's Visceral Rampage requires movement, so it loves for you to be staggered. And Wide Eyes. I'm sorry, Wide Eyes is also in this group because Wide Eyes is just fun. And the Doppelganger, basically the Doppelganger can use Lucius's marker to its advantage. It can copy, you know, over lures. It can. Wide Eyes actually has a fairly decent attack. And effectively what you're trying to do is just get Fervent in there. With Lucy kind of like terrorizing things around the edges, with Fervent just in the middle being the giant jerk that he is, causing havoc and doing awful things to people. With Lucy pulling people into his sphere of influence. And into Lucy's also really good at doing it down the wrong path and bringing them to Urn Bearer range, where they just get beat up by Hazardous Terrain.
See, I thought you were going to go Lucius. Castor Nekoma. There for double master
for the I have thought about that one as well.
Well, the ultimate beatdown crew.
I am a monster, not that much of a monster. Castor plus Nekama feels like if you're not prepared for it, that is going to be an absolute beat.
Yeah, that I thought about doing Curse Wedge, and I don't have my Castor crew fully painted, so I can't do it. But Wedge Curse with Castor 2 and Nekama as your double master. Or, I mean, you could go either way. You could go Nekama with Castor 2 as a second master, and that way you can get your matures for 10 instead of 11. So, yeah, that...
I don't like paying for Marathine, and he needs to have Marathine. Oh,
yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's my thoughts on it. Like, I would rather pay two extra points for... Or one extra point for mature, because I don't think you're going to bring double mature with two masters. So you bring like one mature for 11 points. You know, you don't pay for Marathine. Nekama doesn't care if she doesn't have her totem. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then she's just in there being obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a shaman to keep everybody up. I don't know. I like bringing a shaman with Castor sometimes anyway, with Returned anyway, because healing everything at the end of its activation is really good, and it has Black Blood synergies for them to play with. So
yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so since you kind of touched on talking about dual master, this is kind of off topic that we hadn't talked before, but yeah, you kind of opened the bag on that. So since this is non-bans and you can bring dual master, what are your guys' opinions on the likelihood of we're going to be seeing a lot of the dual masters and or like super friends lists or like just a lot of out of keyword stuff in this tournament? What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Cody's not playing, so I don't think you'll see a lot of dual masters. Cody loves dual masters. I think dual masters and cursed objects is just really good. It's just really good. You're bringing two things that are usually very hard to kill, very hard to take down. I don't think we'll see a whole lot of it. I think we will see the Super Friends list, just because that's... If anyone's playing Thunders right now, I expect to see that. I think Guild kind of Super Friends it up a little bit more than a lot of other crews. I think we were already talking about, before we started recording, how, you know, Bog is showing up in just about every Bayou list lately, because he's so good. But I think from past experience, dual masters is still fairly rare.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people are practicing factor.
Yeah, I will say last year at the Masters, I think I had at least two games that were double master, and in both games, it felt like they were it felt like it was a combo. Like a specific engine that had been built. Like one was your local Tim chucking Levy at me with the Vix, and that was rude.
Fun fact on that, it was a wonderful list, game that you faced. He made that specifically to play against me.
It's true. We have recorded.
Oh, that's delightful. Well, can confirm. It's good.
Yeah, it's real good.
But I do think we're going to see some amount of it, because I do think there are still dual master combinations in the game that are very strong, not just in round five, but in general.
And over we have the best dual master pairing of all time in Neverborn, because you must play the list that I call, Can I Pet That Dog? Which is Titania, the Autumn Queen, Gorar, Marcus, Malasaurus Rex, a Rougarou, a Boar, and a Jackal.
That sounds delightful.
It's wonderful, because the Rex actually gets all powered up and big, and they just go take their pet for a walk. It's a power couple walking their poodle. There's nothing weird about it.
And then when it eventually dies, you just bring it back with your Gorar.
Yeah. But you've got the pig, so it probably won't die, because you're going to be giving it, you're going to be chucking damage off of it anyway.
Yep.
It's beautiful. And Marcus is going to be healing it, and you're going to be drawing cards, and it's lovely.
Yeah, my opinion on this is that I think we're going to actually see more of the out of keyword Super Friends lists than we'll probably see more than the Duel Masters. And and that's fine. I mean, that's the way the tournament is set up. I mean, myself, I usually prefer to play like all keyword stuff, but I'm not going to tell someone how to play with their little plastic one. So, but yeah, I have a feeling that is what we're going to be seeing quite a bit of at Nova, at least for the Invitational. You know, I think isn't the Open, that is single master, isn't it? I believe.
Yes, the Open is single master, but it is also Scorpius. So that's, you know, its own. That is its own thing. But I agree. I like, my personal play style is I might bring like one, maybe two models out of keyword per list, but very rarely do I run the like all the model, like, you know, just run whatever's best, unless I'm playing like Zoraida one, which loves that kind of list, right? Like,
she's tailor made for the Super Frenzy kind of.
Yeah. But Neverborn's has such, I mean, like, you've got the Hooded Rider, which is really good. You've got the Mysterious Emissary, which is really good. You've got Serena, who is another versatile that's really good. Like, all of our versatile models are pretty, pretty nice. And then if you're, like, thinking out of keyword, Candy?
Yeah. I mean,
like, Candy's the only one I can think of that I'm like, or Candy and Kurgan are the only two that I'm like, oh, that, those are must-haves out of keyword grabs.
Yeah, and I think you could probably add Mature to that list. Maybe not for every master, but
other people can, but not me. I don't play Matures out of keyword. Yeah. I'm weird. But you're right, you're right. Matures do see some play out of keyword as well.
But yeah.
I mean, it just feels like all of our crews have such valuable synergies that going out of key, we don't have a ton of tech really, or counter tech that you can pull in second.
And I will say most of our titles especially seem to be very keyword locked.
Yeah, which I think as a game mechanic is...
Yeah, I don't hate it. I do like that there are some masters that are like, hey, this is really cool, I can just kind of bring what I want. I'm okay with that, but as long as it's not like, you know, 50% of masters in the game just don't bring what they should. Like Lucy 2, you could absolutely play Lucy 2 as kind of a weird super solo with a lawyer or two and whatever the hell you want in the list, and it's fine. It works fine.
And that's what makes him such a good second master. I mean, other than his free action, he can do whatever he wants and he doesn't need one key.
Yeah, very self-sufficient. Yeah.
It's hard for me. It's very hard for me when looking at these pulls because, like, I really want to play Lucy 2 because I really like Lucy 2, but I'm also just like, he always drops like just under the best pick for the pool, and it's super frustrating because I really do want to play him, and then I'm like, well, or I could play this.
So would he fall into that, and would he fall into that category of maybe if the matchup is real bad for your initial pick?
That's what I was going to say. One of the things I've noticed, and this is kind of like a general Neverborn conversation, is that it's it feels like Neverborn gets teched out fairly easily, which is kind of frustrating, especially like I was trying to play against Guild the other day, and I was just racking my brain going, okay, if I play Dreamer and they play Lady J2, that's going to suck. If I play Nekoma and they play Hoffman, that's going to suck. Like, I'm just struggling there, and I think back to it and I'm like, I could have played Lucy, and Lucy doesn't really have like a bad tech matchup because he's just kind of solid in what he does. It easily could just be a Lucy too. Like, that's where you play Lucy.
So that kind of segues in, so like, what kind of, so like, if let's say someone declares like for me, if someone declares Arcanist against me, that really changes what I like to play. So like for me, 90% of the time, if someone is declaring Arcanist, I drop Pandora, just because I think Pandora does a very good job of teching against what most Arcanists bring, and they have a hard time teching against her, mainly because Arcanists are very bad at taking off conditions. So that's kind of my drop into the Arcanist. Do you guys have anything, or like the opposite? If someone declares 10 Thunders into me, unless I know for sure, like 100% sure that they're not going to declare Yoku, Dreamer is off the board for mainly because Yoku it just neuters Dreamer with pass tokens and also with all the Ruthlesses in 10 Thunders. Now, either of you have any things that you look for to tech into or tech out of when someone declares a faction or even a master?
Guild. I mean, Guild's just a big one. Guild has so many anti anti-Neverborn strategies that are just kind of built into their some of their keywords, that it's like Hoffman was tailor-made in a lab to destroy Nekoma. And, you know, I feel like, I think Ben Jules said the other week that, like, Neverborn is, or Guild is the faction that says no. And Neverborn, I think, suffers the most from being said no to, because we tend to, Neverborn crews tend to have, like, one plan and one plan only. And when that plan, like, it's very hard to pivot once you've put everything into your plan. And, yeah, never, like, Guild just feels so easily, like, denies that. The only other one I can say that I'm just, like, ooh, about is, and I'm curious what your guys' thoughts on it are. Teary scares me a little bit. Like, I've given thought to the fact that, like, maybe I hold back and then just try to thune the matron into oblivion. But yeah, like I'm a little concerned about that Teary list, that matron list, because there's not very much you can do to just stop it from getting right there in your face real quick.
Yeah, unfortunately, I can't help you there. I have yet to face Teary, and that is a big concern of mine going into Nova.
She's brutal.
So, but hopefully, maybe Jim, you have some helpful suggestions for the both of us against Teary.
So here's the thing, Teary, I would put dollars to donuts that Teary is the new boogeyman of Malifaux for this cycle. Damien went away. Right now, the current gaining grounds rewards killing in a way that other gaining grounds haven't necessarily rewarded to the same extent. And Teary says no to being killed. She also generates a ton of card draw. So trying to go with things that tax the hand, not a great call.
Well, and everything just layers defenses, right?
Right. It's defensiveness and its power is an emergent property. It's not an apparent property. And what I mean by that is, when you look at Teary Nomad's card, it says that she gets to draw a card with Let Bygones Be Bygones, with draw a card when a friendly model declares atonement. That's once per activation. That doesn't seem like a lot, but you will quickly find that that means that they're functionally drawing X cards, where X is the number of models in their crew every turn. That amount of card draw just is able to fuel a lot of high quality attacks. So how do you deal with a keyword that is probably not killable and probably able to do high quality attacks? I think you have to play away from it. I think you have to not give them something punch. And that's easier said than done. But I do like the idea of Woe into Teary. And I like the idea of Zoraida into Teary, even as a second hire. Because you can do things like reach out and obey Matron to go punch stuff. If they burn out Matron to make Matron fast, you can go with Candy and strip the fast off and stun her at the same time. I know that the Unseelie engine exists, but anyone who listened to Boring Conversation's most recent tournament prep episode heard that the Unseelie engine is not worth bringing in your bag. And I agree. No one should bring the Unseelie engine to Nova in their bag. Leave it at home, please. The move four does hurt it, and
that keyword doesn't care about move four. It's got so much out of activation pushes and such. I think your main problem with the main problem you're going to run into with bringing like Zoraida is that the freaking ancient construct exists, right? Like they have that take the hit. That they can do from impossibly far away is just, it means that like,
it means you toss their model away from them.
Yeah. It just means that you've got to deal with the construct. And then, you know, cause like the big thing, the key thing is if you can kill Parson, if you can kill Parson before Matron gets powered up, then the Matron basically can be conditioned in oblivion. But if you can't kill Parson, Parson makes her fast. Parson removes conditions. Parson gives her plus flips. Parson basically is the key to do that. But when he's sitting right there on top of that ancient construct, it's just so frustrating.
So what I'm
hearing, which is why I like Thune to be like, hey, look, She got in my face. Now I'm just going to order bring Yuri 1 and be like, you guys don't have any like inherent marker removal, so I am just going to spam drop 20 ice pillars in and have fun doing whatever you're doing in your deployments.
So what I'm hearing is that the key to Tiri for Nova is that everyone who bought the models is just really slow painters and doesn't have them painted for the tournament.
I think there are other ways to go about it. I just haven't had enough time to unravel it myself.
Yeah, it is a concern. I also think that if you sleep on Damien 1, you're going to get your face punched in. Damien 1 is so effective at killing a single model a turn. And Neverborn models are not known for their resilience. So I think he is not. I think the rumors of his demise are greatly exaggerated. He just isn't Damien 2 at this point. It's Damien 1.
That's why I'm getting a practice game against Damien 1 Tuesday night.
Yeah, it's worthwhile. It's definitely worthwhile. I would say it's slowed down. It's not nearly as horrific as it used to be. The Lohith nerf really affected him, and I think that's good. But he's still gross. I think you will see Damien 1. I think you will see Tiri. I think that you will probably still see Von Schill. I think Toll is still pretty good. You'll probably still see Toll running around.
Yeah, Toll's demise is another one that's greatly exaggerated. Yeah. He's still going to be there. And him losing the ability on his free action to get rid of markers doesn't matter because he has Rocketeer.
And Bashel's another one that I look at for Neverborn, and I'm like, oh, he's basically Nekoma but sturdier. Crap.
Especially in that Cursed Wedge. He's going to be real close to you. Yeah.
Wait, he has matures that can use stones? Crap. And eat your corpse markers? Crap. Like,
so I guess that prompts a question I've been having and asking myself on my commutes to work every day. Why Neverborn? Why are you all playing Neverborn in one of the largest events on the East Coast of the United States when it has all these limitations?
Because purple goes through my veins, and I will die playing Neverborn no matter what tournament I go to. Granted, I do have the whole Rezzer faction, actually, but I love Neverborn. The first two masters I bought were Pandora and Lilith, and I die and ride with my purple. And I understand going into tournaments, especially with the high-quality opponents I'll be facing, that I could be at a disadvantage with them. It's what I play.
I was going to play Bayou, and then I'm looking and I'm like, I've got this Dreamer crew that's absolutely gorgeous and I want to show it off. I've got, I've got like a Euripides crew that's really gorgeous and I want to show it off. I've played a crap ton of Bayou, a crap ton, and I just wanted to try something different, so Neverborn it is this time, and we'll see where it goes. I'm probably, after I play all of Neverborn, I'm probably shifting to the one faction I don't own yet, which will be Thunders. So but at this point, yeah, like they're fun to play. I think that they're still good. I think they reward good play in a way that a lot of other factions, like when you get out of a bad situation in a Neverborn list, you feel like you've accomplished something. Like when you win a game where you didn't think you were going to win, you know, in Bayou, it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, Ma 2 does that, right? Like, or Ma 1 does that, like, or you know, zip. So Zip is going to pull it out. When you pivot with a Neverborn list and manage to pull out a win, you're like, oh, where did that come from? Like, that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel you. We had a recent tournament in Toledo, and I lost Dreamer 2 halfway through turn 2, and I because I was stupid, and I still managed to pull out the win. So that, yeah, I feel you there. You know, when you do something like that and can pull out the win when you've greatly miscalculated and still can win, it's pretty satisfying. I mean, that goes with any crew you're playing, but yeah, with the Neverborn, even more so.
You really do like to play him aggressively, don't you?
Yes. Well, I made the mistake as I put him on top of a height 4 thing, and I didn't know Raspy 2 could push him, and she pushed him off. He took a bunch of he took 4 damage, and then the Wind Dingo attacked him and Red Joker damage, and he died.
But
it was fun.
Well, that's the important thing, is that you have him.
And that's the thing too. I think I enjoy. I really enjoy the list that I've prepared. Like I love the Brood Mama. She's a lot of fun to play.
Oh yeah.
I love Dreamer 1. I'm just like, thanks to actually you guys, I'm just kind of starting to figure out how I want to play Dreamer 2. And sweet. I'm having a lot of fun with that. Marcus, I feel like, has always been an underplayed master, Marcus 1 and 2. Just a lot of fun to play. Yuri is one of my favorite crews in the whole game. Like, I don't necessarily know that GG3 is really like Yuri's bag all that much. Mm-hmm. But I love playing him. It's a lot of fun. So that's really my thing. It's just it's fun list to play, whether or not they're like the best. Like when I go to Thunders, what am I going to be playing? What am I looking at first? Yanlo 1. Like, you know, like I'm not necessarily all even in like high level tournaments. I'm just not always looking for like what is going to win me this tournament because I don't really care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really just in it to go do games, have fun and see how well I can do while enjoying the game.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to the Niz. It's a faction that feels like we have a lot of extremely powerful, but we play with all of our cards on the table. And if somebody's played against your 4, they know the tricks. You have to use them in a way that will surprise them. And that is extremely, I think it really rewards really good players, but good players just value more over that kind of. I think people who play Neverborn all the time are really here for the aesthetics. Both of the crews, which were obviously, you know, the swag faction, but also the aesthetics of the
Well, like, you point that out, and I'm thinking back to the game that I talked about on the Texas podcast with playing Dreamer into Cursed Objects. Like, literally, I'd never heard of anyone playing Dreamer 1 into Cursed Objects before, right? Like, that's just not... And even going into it, the game, I was kind of going into it going, oh, this is... this could be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then by turn 2, I was like, oh, I think I figured this out. Yeah. And I just happened to have that Red Joker for the double Alps. And I was like, yep, here we go. And and it worked. And like, so, you know, like I wouldn't play that list in Cursed Objects into like Guild, because if they bring the Jury, you're just screwed. Like you can't hold models back to do that. But in that situation, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. I like doing this. So, and that's one of the reasons I like Brood Mama over, Sword Nekema, is that like, she has tricks. She has little things that she can do, and she's not always going to be like doing the same plan every single game, every single turn.
Yeah. I mean, just cause she does feel like kind of almost a toolbox master where I've done games where I really just deal with her the entire game, the next game for other and figuring
and
out
and the Hounds and Angel Eyes.
Oh,
and the Hounds and Angel Eyes really open things up for her.
Oh yeah.
And to your credit, James, I've seen you do more work with Lilu and Lily 2 than I think any other person has gotten work out of.
Yes. Oh, I haven't played Lilu yet, but Lily 2, like, that lure is big deal. Like, it's a big deal.
Lily 2, I think, stands on her almost. The stat 7 lure in a fast crew, it's kind of a no-brainer. Leilu, I fully accept the hard argument, but some things that I've heard people trying to do is, like, trying to ramp up the Black Blood. What Leilu has is a build of Masochistic Thoughts, where everything that ends its activation gets to just means your dogs, your tots, whatever. Just dogpile it, kill almost...
It's the good for a laugh. That's what draws me to that model. And, like, if I have to, you know, if I have to bring... If I have to deal with the fact that it's got a melee and Masochistic Thoughts shouldn't require a card and yet it does, like, fine. But it's the blood for the blood to just good for a laugh. Like, that's important in a crew that wants big beady things and wants a big beady hand.
A ton of cycling and
I like it a lot.
Well, just because we're on the Broodmother counter, secret tech I have. Klaus Norwood can use Pocketful of Personalities to Black Blood Shaman's corpse thing.
Yes, he can.
So if you are looking for more ways to generate corpses outside of just Klaus's, it's pretty silly.
giving one of your models slow isn't super great, though, to get that. But I still like it. I like Klaus all right. I have a hard time. I feel like Klaus is a model that doesn't really fit into a lot of what Neverborn does. So he's kind of weird to like figure out where you want him. Yeah. But when he does work, he's fun.
He's good, especially with our will grants. Mm-hmm. I've always been a fan of the starter kit models, but they're not as... You
know. Yeah.
Which I think is, not to belabor it, I think that's kind of the Neverborn thing. There's much more of a right tool for the job and fewer, this is the Omni tool for this season.
Yeah. The look on your opponent's face when they think that their scheme markers are safe, and then your Widow Weaver goes, okay, cool, I'm going to pull out a Red Cap and Trail of Gore. Mm-hmm. And they go, oh, yep. You could do something besides Stitched.
I can do it the tone.
Mm-hmm.
Good, I like it. I like it. Klaus is one I need to play more. Klaus is one of those things, and I guess for anybody listening, like I'll say the thing that I say all the time is like, if there's a model and you're really not sure what the heck to do with this model, throw it in lists until you figure it out. Like take sometimes, like, I guess like if all you're doing is playing for the win, then by all means play what you want. But sometimes it's fun to take models like Klaus and throw them in a couple lists until you figure out what they're doing. And then every once in a while you'll be like, oh, okay, that's a neat, like, that's cool, this works here. Mm-hmm. And you know, then you just you have one more model. And the cool thing about models like Klaus is you have a model that your opponent doesn't necessarily know what's going on. So you have that sort of black, you know, dark horse factor of like, well, information exchange is coming. I just got cards back. You know, oh, you've got to discard a card. Like, people hope you weren't keeping that 13. Yeah. You know, so I like models like that, but I think that like the thing about them, and like Hildegard, right? The thing about them is you can't just like throw them into a list once and go, it didn't work, I hate this model.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it takes finesse. Finesse models require learning the finesse. And you know, that's the lesson I think that like Dreamer 2, learning how to play Dreamer 2 taught me, is like, I struggled. I tried to play him, and I was playing him a little bit more like I normally play Dreamer 1, and I was like, this doesn't work. And then like my lists weren't working. And then I was like, okay, I'm just going to bring all the minions, and I'm like, oh, okay. So I think I played a game against Jim. I you know, I talked to you, and then I played a game against Jim, and Jim like showed me what he had learned from playing against you. And I was like, oh, this is cool. This is really cool. And then I immediately took it to another game like the next, like a couple days later, and was like, okay, this is fun. Like, I like this. I'm just, you know, bopping all over the board and, you know, being able to bury twice in a turn, and it's just good stuff. I like it. So, yeah, take the models that are weird and play them until they're not weird. And maybe they're Ashlyn, maybe they're not good. Like,
oof.
Know, right? Like, or, you know, I still stand by, I love the Killjoy trick with Titania 1 being able to make hazardous markers is really good. I've seen that happen, and I've seen people just flat out lose their master on turn 2. Wow. Because Titania comes in and is like, yep, I'm going to bap you around in hazardous terrain until you die. Like,
mm-hmm.
It's not great because then you also just are stuck with Killjoy, but, you know.
I mean, you say that. I've seen games where Killjoy does, in fact, do some damage.
But does he ever kill any joy?
Almost. But anywho, so we have this talk is like we focused on one of the events at Nova. We have hopefully not much longer for GG3. What, you know, I don't know if we want to prognosticate or anything, but like what do you think we would need to see to make GG4 better for Neverborn? Is it a Neverborn change, or is it something that GG can change?
I think Dreamer 2 gives us an actual Scheme Master now. I mean, Lucius is kind of that, but like until Lucius's keyword gets a little bit of a buff, I kind of like he gets shuffled down to the bottom of the conversation. But with Dreamer 2 opening up, like people learning how to play, and we have an actual Scheme Master now, so I think that that's a good thing to have. You know, for like newer things, because I just don't think everybody's really caught on. I know Emma over in the UK has been playing him a lot. I don't know. I would just, weirdly enough, I don't think that the kill strategies are the best strategies for Neverborn in the game. I think that in order for Neverborn to really be able to sustain themselves well, they have to kill a lot and kill quickly. And stuff like cursed objects, where you need to kill slowly and precisely, are painful, because models that are left up are models that can kill your models. So I would kind of like to see no kill strategy, no specific cursed objects, no bounty hunter, no reckoning, no public enemies, just eliminate that, because we're going to be killing anyway. There's no reason to have a kill strategy. Give us a strategy that, give us four strategies that require interactions with other models or interactions with markers to do things, and the killing will come. It always does.
I think Maeve kind of hit it on the head there. I think we do killing really good, but I think we are better at maybe killing fast, but also getting somewhere to kill something. Like, as a whole, I think Neverborn have a lot of like speed and or out of activation moving. We don't like, other than maybe Pandora, we really aren't much about the, we want to ball up and kill stuff. We want to spread out. So I think, yeah, being more schemey and or tricksy, not the tricksy keyword, but being tricky about what we want to do, and being in a ball in an area to kill stuff isn't our strong point. So where we can more use our strengths, where you get the faster models as a whole in a faction, and the out of activation movement, and basically just coming at the game a little bit on sideways, is like I talk about with new players. They go, oh, what did Neverborn do? Well, a lot of our masters come at the game sideways. We're not front to back. We're spread out side to side, coming at you diagonally and stuff like that. So I think if we can get a GG that rewards that a little bit more than this last one, as things go, I think this GG swung the pendulum way to the side of killing and being in certain areas. So if this pendulum swings to the other side, where it's all about spreading out, not being in certain areas, that I think that will reward Neverborn more so than other factions.
Okay.
What do you think, Jim?
I asked because I didn't know and I didn't have much of an opinion, but what I'm hearing is, it sounds definitely to me like it would be a good change for the game to shake up the GG, and that could work to change some of the imbalance of perceived faction strength at the moment.
Honestly, I think other than models, I think GG can actually be more impactful to how the game is played, more so than the introduction of models to the game, other than maybe a Damien 2, who was, obviously over the top and got corrected. When you're changing the whole way that you score your points for the game, which is inevitably how you are going to win the game, I think that is more impactful than just about anything else. And I think that's also represented in just like how healthy a game is. It can also be looked at as how much content is put out there by people who don't work for the company, like podcast, YouTube videos. So when you see just about every single podcast and every single YouTube channel, they make a video or whatever about the GG, I think that kind of tells you how impactful that is to the game. Everyone wants to talk about the new way you score, the new way you win the game. So I think most people would agree that just the GGs themselves are so much more impactful to the game in general than any group of models that can be.
I wouldn't mind a little bit of a slowdown on models entering the game. I'll be honest with you. I feel like we've had a huge push and we're reaching what kind of feels like a critical point in the level of models that we have in the game, especially adding, you know, we over the course of third edition, we've added a brand new faction. We've added a new master for every faction. Well, mostly a new master. You know, we have two dual class masters, whatever. And we've added the titles, which is basically like doubling the number of masters that we had in the game already. I wouldn't be upset if we just slowed it a little bit. Like the level of knowledge that you need to be a competitive player in this game is fairly exhausting sometimes.
I agree. I still don't think that the whole meta has figured everything out just from the dual masters that were added, you know, 2 books ago, let alone all the mm-hmm. the madness stuff. So I think, you know, that's why I think we are still going to see surprises like, oh, you know, this master is really good and this master is really good. And then someone brings in a Dark Horse master title and or OG version. And they're like, oh my God, why didn't anyone see this before? It's because the meta still hasn't figured everything out from all those titles I've got. And then you add GG changes on top of that. And
I mean, look, we're seeing the rise of Asami right now in the MWS. Yep. And like Asami 1 no one's ever said like Asami 1 is bad, but after the summon nerf, she was played a lot less. Lady Yume's been out for over, 2 years now? Mm-hmm. And suddenly people are like, look what you can do with Lady Yume. And
heck, Gwen Maddox, who's the other component there, has existed in the form she's in, I think, since 3E launched.
Yeah.
And yes, the game has changed over time, and the community and the game perception has matured. But the fact that that treasure has been uncovered I agree. There's probably a lot of potential that has just not been found yet. I don't think that potential exists in wrestlers, but I do think that there are some models out there, but that we're getting off topic because we were talking Neverborn. This is the Neverborn prepisode, right? Mm-hmm. That's what calling it. Mm-hmm. So I guess as a new to the faction player, what tips or things would you all recommend I keep an eye out for in like what my opponents might be like, just faction wide? Are there heuristics you have that are like you were saying earlier, Scott, about you going into Arcanists, you'd like to drop Woe because of the way they use conditions and have hard ways to remove conditions.
Also too, that I didn't mention it, is that Arcanists tend to bring a lot of stuff that drop markers, and Pandora is one of two masters that have ways to just mass erase markers. The other one being Yuri 2. Mm-hmm. But
okay.
I worry about Outcasts a little bit. I think in general, Outcasts has a lot of really solid, high damage guns. Neverborn, you know, statistically just doesn't really like guns all that much. So like, I feel like the goal for, and then Outcast also, like if they're playing Von Schill, has that same access to Metallurgist that makes you want to hate life in Hoffman. There's just a couple, I feel like there's a couple of factions that you just kind of have to look at and go, this is, what is the, there's going to be an uphill battle, but maybe I can choose the smaller hill to get up. Right. You know, like, you know, where's, but also like you said, you're only bringing two keywords, right? I think you had said you were only thinking about bringing Nephilim and Nightmare.
It's between 3 and 4 keywords at this point.
Oh, you have Dora too. I would say don't be scared to try something different rather than always thinking like, oh, I can't play this master into this matchup. Think about like maybe what's a way I can play around. Like, I know this is the problem. How do I play around this problem? How do I play in such a way that my opponent is not gaining strength, but having to like fight to keep that strength? You know, if you're going to play into guns, be aggressive. Like, don't wait for them to shoot you. Get in there and be obnoxious. You know, force them to have a target saturation. You know, don't, your small models are probably going to be picked off regardless of what you do. So don't spend your turns hiding them. Throw them up there, like throw your whole crew and say, okay, you might kill my sorrow, but Dora is now in your face. And, you know, you did that to yourself. Because I think that's how you beat bad odds in Neverborn is, you just lean into what Neverborn does best, which is kill things, you know, get in, aggressive.
Also, two things to watch out for, you know, and obviously this is more crew dependent, but Ruthless, especially Dreamer and Pandora do not like, their crews do not like Ruthless and or Plus Flips. Built-in Plus Flips can ruin your day. So those are kind of things to watch out for. That's why I say, you know, Dreamer, try to avoid the 10 Thunders because they just have so much of it that they can bring in versatile.
Home Resers.
They do, yeah.
But the cool thing about that is you can usually, like, force your way into dealing with those. You know the Ruthless is only going to be on two models. I think Ruthless in the faction is only on, without, is only on two models. I think it's only on Lenny and Gators. Otherwise, they have no Ruthless. Yeah. So if you can mitigate the two models that they put Ruthless on, then you're good.
And then also, too, you're making them make choices, because I know a lot of Bayou players like to put Diversion on their masters, especially if they're playing an aggressive master. Mm-hmm. Now they have to make a decision. Do they want Ruthless on their aggressive master, or do they want Diversion on their aggressive?
And I can tell you, as a main Bayou player, Neverborn is one of the factions I worry about.
Yep. Wow.
Dora is real bad for a lot of Bayou, and Nekema is the crews that aren't worried about Dora are worried about Nekema. So, like, it's not an easy time on their part to figure out, like, where they want to go with this. So,
No, that's all helpful. Thank you.
So, one last thing I want to talk about, I did put in the list. So, I'll ask the question and I'll answer it first so you guys have a chance to think about it. So, going into not just Nova, but any kind of turn, so what do you feel like your weaknesses are in going in? So I'll answer this question. So I've talked about this with some of my local players, and I actually talked about this, I think, after last Nova, is my issue I have, I think my weakness is I go into a tournament, and I usually will practice the rounds. And I come in, my mind is locked in. Okay, I'm playing this master title, do this pool, and this is the crew I'm bringing. And I don't change. And to give you a good example of that, this past Gen Con, I played Doug from Texas in round 3. And my plan was I was going to play Z2 and to carve the path. And he brought his Marcus crew. So if I had been smart and thought it through instead of just locking in on what I was going to play, I should have switched to Zerata 1, where I could have affected his upgrades on the models I would obey in his crew, as opposed to just basically letting him do what he wanted to do with all his upgrades. So I think that's my biggest weakness, is I just kind of lock in on what I'm going to do, and I don't use my knowledge of the game to my benefit to change what I should play going into my opponent. So I think that's what I need to work on at Nova if I want to see a better result than what I did last. I mean, even I have an example from last year at Nova. I played in the open round against Andre, and he brought Sheamus. And I brought my three Insidious Madness crew, not thinking, okay, well, Sheamus is uniquely qualified to one-shot an Insidious Madness because he doesn't care about terrifying, and he does 8 damage to Insidious Madness, which one-shots it. So I should have switched out and taken out some of my Insidiouses for models that would be more likely to survive into a Sheamus, put in the Widow Weaver. Now, granted, she can be killed relatively easy, but at least she's a stone user, where I can stone and put them on negatives, I can stone away the damage. So I think that's what I need to improve upon going into Nova, is not to lock myself in on any one choice, kind of look at what my opponent is and what he's likely to do to maybe, if I need to, switch the crew around. You guys have a thought on that? On what, maybe what your guys would need to work on when going into a Nova, or, you know, and applies to any turn?
The joke answer is that going into a tournament that wants to do Scorpius and deciding to bring Neverborn is when you have to travel 9 hours. Really, really obnoxious to pack. And that's a big weakness because all of the butts in Neverborn are big. Like, I'm packing Savage and Faye and Chimera and Nephilim and Castor. And I'm just like, why is every model so flippin' huge? You know, I have the third edition Dreamer, a Chompy model, and it's like the width of 250 millimeter markers. And I'm just like, why? Why? It's a real problem. But honestly, for me, I think my thing is, and I'm trying to do the Scorpius this year, because it is part of the tournament. It is a big part of the tournament. And I think it's, you know, in the spirit of the tournament to attempt it. So I am. Focusing on five separate masters is really hard for me. I do best when I bring two and that's it. I don't have to think. I don't have to question. I have a plan. I have practiced. I know this crew inside out, upside down. You know, like if turn one should almost go without me ever having to put a real thought into the game. And having five keywords to choose from is going to make that a little more difficult for me. So we'll see how well I do with that. Definitely in the Masters, I think I am just going flat out two keywords. I'll probably play Nephilim. I'll probably play Dreamer. And we'll call it a day there. Because the other problem that I have is if I have a whole lot of models, I have a carefully thought out plan. I know what I want to do. I get to the table. I change my mind. I play something else. I lost Nova last year. Why? Because I got in my head and I saw Dita 2. I knew he was bringing Dita 2. I didn't know what to do. So I grabbed Ophelia because in my brain, I knew Ophelia was a decent matchup. Turns out the board was not good for Ophelia. And I lost badly. Mm-hmm. If I had just played Brewmaster, would I have won? I don't know. But I would have had a better game because I had been playing Brewmaster almost every game of the 4-day weekend. And I think I would have had a better game just because I knew what to, you know, a lot better than the Ophelia that I'd only really played a couple games with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like you were talking about sticking to the plan. My problem is when I deviate from a plan that was already a good plan.
Well, I think this is a great place for me to come in because my problem is having a plan. I think it's a bit of a joke at this point that in the run-up to any local event, I will waffle on which faction, let alone which keyword to bring. Because for like a 3-round, 1-day event, I like to just bring one keyword and jam that for all 3 rounds. Just because, well, one, if I just bring one keyword, I can play all in keyword like a Chad and, you know, flex that way. And also so it minimizes my decision making at the event. Because that's the big thing for me is decision making at an event is very taxing and I want to minimize that as much as I can. The problem is that the decisions you make in game like scheme selection, I keep finding ways to trip myself up those. So like I might plan, oh, I can absolutely do this scheme, and then I just don't end up doing it. Or I end up satisfying a scheme that I didn't pick, and I realize I should have just picked that scheme because it would have fit what I was going to do. And you'd think after playing as much Malifaux as I have that I would be better at that, but that is I will say, jumping keywords and jumping factions as much as I have has given me a unique perspective on the lion's share of crews in the game. And I feel comfortable knowing kind of what everyone's trying to do, but it has done no favors for knowing how those crews score when they're piloted. And there's a lot of good advice out there. I mean, Scott, to an extent, you said you've got purple in your veins. You've been playing Neverborn since the beginning. You know what your crews like to do. You know how your crews like to play. I have an idea of it, but it's the shadow on the wall of Plato's cave idea. And that leads to a lot of mistakes that I make on a given event. And so, especially in this coming calendar year, this coming season of the NAFT, I'm really going to try and iron out what I'm going to be taking competitively and trying to actually get reps in with.
Oh, I feel you. I've never seen so many models and not enough time. Mm-hmm. And I stick to mainly 80% Neverborn, 20% Rezzard. So what about you, James? What mistakes do you make when you're at a tournament?
The main one, I pretty much host tournaments, but directly answer is specifically maybe because I've played so much Vassal in World Series, love to tinker for a whole about every possible model interaction, like a solitaire game on Vassal against their crew, just in the cards. I love to do that, and I can definitely, in a tournament, that's a pipe dream. That's, you have a 10 minutes break, another 15 minutes to play. That is super, super, and I tend to just kind of rush through decisions, and that's...
Well, we kind of went all around this episode, huh?
It was good, though. Yeah. It's kind of one of the factions that it almost feels akin to Bayou in some ways. They are hardcore about it.
That's a generous way to say it.
Okay.
So I do have one more question to round it off with, if you want.
Sure, yeah.
Since you are a Neverborn player for a very long time, what is the crew that is your Neverborn white whale? Like the one that you just want to work in a way that you just really want it to work and it doesn't really ever like pan out for you.
Have you listened?
yes, I have, but please elaborate.
The one that I've really, really primarily not to share specifically, he has so many very cools. A lot of them feel like hyper-specific tech picks to very specific things. Not a lot of them, 30% of the, his defenses are all very flimsy. But there's a lot of AP around, drawing cards. There's a lot of powerful things. But, I mean, honestly, maybe it just comes down to the defenses. Flimsy. But I also feel like Lucius 1, there are now on Tresor and Obey multiple times for a lower Lucius 1.
Yeah.
That's it.
I keep looking at hidden. So Nathan plays Lucius 1 a lot into me. And the thing that always gets me, the one thing that always every round surprises me, is Hidden Sniper. I know it's a stat 5, right? But like injured 1, if all Lucy does on his turn is walk to make everybody walk, you know, to bounce with him, and then Hidden Sniper twice to give injured 2 on something, that's not the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah.
And then like if you think about Angel Eyes getting better, makes Lucy 1 better.
Like Angel Eyes being better makes everyone better.
Right. Yes. Right. Yeah, I mean, and like, I think people sleep on Alan Reed. I think Alan Reed, especially like right now in GG3, I think Alan Reed is really, really good.
Yeah.
You know, forcing people to have to deal and carve a path with getting through Chatty Aura, or not Chatty Aura, but Boring Conversation and Diversion Aura, and all of those things that they need to try to get, you know, those extra actions and stuff. I don't hate it. And Guild Lawyers are the best 6-point cost model in the game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, Investigators are a model that I always look at and I always go, yeah, I think this could work. And then it just doesn't. It's just, they just don't. Agent 46 he's Agent 46. One game he'll go in and just be a Cuisinart. And the next game he will...
I do like Agent 46. I run a Lucy 2 list. Oh, I haven't run it in a while, but I was running it there for a while. Agent 46 with a Mysterious Emissary, and he copies the Mysterious Emissary's gun, is really good.
I don't hate it.
And it keeps him out of being Cuisinarted himself.
Yeah. I've done a really, really stupid thing against an Alpha list where I brought Agent 46 and... I bought Lucy 2, Agent 46, and a Doppelganger, and Thune. And by turn 3, I had 4 of his models. 4 of his 7 models were in ice cubes.
Man, that sounds like an NPE.
It was dumb, but it worked. Yeah, it was not a good game for it. It was not a good game. But like, he charged him with Marcus 2, and Agent 46 put Marcus 2 in an ice cube. So then he was like, crap, I gotta rescue him. So he sent in a kitty, and Mimic put the kitty in an ice cube. And... then he was like, okay, well, I guess I'll send in my initiate. And then Thune put him in an ice cube. And like everything he sent in to get to fix it because he was playing, it worked because he was playing such an elite crew that like he'd run in to save one and then they would just be chunked. I was like, okay, this is real dumb. Don't play that in a tournament. Whoever's listening to this, don't play that in a tournament. It's not a good list.
Dave might not play it, but I'm thinking that sounds really fun.
Well, you should play that, and you should also play the dinosaur list.
I've done a similar dinosaur list, and it is a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't think it's.
I have. We could have a whole podcast about stupid lists that Mavis made. I even have one right here that is called this. Oh no, that's one of the dinosaurs. Yeah, it's simply called "This List Is Bad. Do Not Play." like I have one here. That snake is poison. With the Scorpius, Miranda, two Razor Spine Rattlers, Ord Initiate, Widow Weaver, and a Wicked Doll.
Interesting. That's a lot of poison.
It's a lot of poison. It's fun. It's is it good? No. Is it fun? Yes.
For Aaron lists, I Lucius one I called Trace Problema, where I brought a Garion, an Insidious Madness, and a Mature. So three That's... minions that he can obey that are very, very different problems to deal with.
I kind of like it. Honestly, I don't mind out of keyword Garions. I think they're really having not being able to charge in that 2-inch range is real good.
Oh, yeah.
Real good. I don't hate that. I would play that list.
So coming up on the 2-hour mark, we're gonna call it here.
Or we'll just keep going forever. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, believe me, I would love to, but I'm sure some of you here have to work tomorrow.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah,
it was a lot of fun. Talking with everybody into this episode. Who's not enough? You heard these are secret.
All right. Are we supposed to have our secret decoder ring? Mm. Is it all supposed to be in code?
Get yours at Nova when I see you.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, thanks everyone for listening.